Okay, you're up.
I just have a couple things that I want to talk about. We recently had our professional training day. Even educators need to keep learning. We had a very good day that had multiple sessions for the staff. On the agenda tonight, there are a few people we put on so we can pay them for coming. One of them, Dr. Shelley Heron, she worked with our math teachers on the content standards in this room, as a matter of fact. That was a really good session. I sat in there for about an hour, and it was very positive and beneficial. Then we also had Lee DeShire Kay at Baldwin Wallace worked with our music teachers and provided a session on adaptive music. The session was at Baldwin Wallace, like I said. I would like to thank Kathy Maxwell, Alex Fleming, Stephanie Morgan, and all of those who helped plan the day. The part that I really want to point out is how impressive it was that it wasn't just things happening inside the school with school people. We had help from the local community, for example, community organizations and businesses. St. John West Shore brought in, boy, they have a ton of those CPR dummies, brought those in and taught and did a session on CPR with our staff, which was very good. And we also had, I got to go to American Greetings and the Equity Group and on a tour in both of those places with our art teachers and business teachers. And it's interesting, you would think American Greetings, okay, I can definitely see the art and business connection in there, but the Equity Group, which is, I think a lot of people may pass by it, it's the old Cleveland Clinic building right by the courtyard, Marriott. They have a very impressive art display in there, and they're very proud of it. So they were able to walk through our art department while I sat with some of our business teachers and some of their leaders to talk about connections we can make between the schools and their business as well. So it was a really, really good day, and just thank you to everybody who participated in it as well as helped plan it. The last thing I want to talk about is as we're closing our fall sports season, and as it does close, I'm not going to highlight every sport. There's just a few that are really standing out right now. Girls soccer, probably in the next 20 minutes, is going to be playing in the district semifinal against Amherst. The game has been moved from Reed Field to here. Boys soccer beat North Ridgeville 5-0 to advance to the district semifinal game against Avon. And is that Wednesday or tomorrow?
Wednesday.
And girls cross country, the entire team qualified. The team qualified for regionals and had a district champion in Erica Francesconi. And girls tennis, the doubles team finished fourth in state. So Division I state tournament, they finished fourth. And that was Demi Jaharvi and Ashley Mishlek. So congratulations to them and a wonderful season. I'll stop.
All right. I have a couple different reports that I would like to go through tonight with the board. First and foremost, in the interest of time, I know we have a lot going on in the district tonight, and I certainly don't want to take more time than necessary. So let me point out that both the quarterly report as well as the board presentation regarding the five-year forecast is available on Board Docs. Feel free to go into Board Docs and review it. And if you have questions, I'm more than happy to speak with any of the board members, certainly, but also any of our public with any questions specific to either one of the reports. But if it's okay, I'm going to start off with our quarterly report. Like I said, it is available on the website, and I believe that we had printed out copies for the board here as well. It is a rather long document, and I apologize for that. You'll find, though, there's a lot of detail on it. So I'm going to skip through a couple different areas. First and foremost, with quarterly report, we start off with our five-year forecast and the assumptions. And I'm going to skip over this right now because we're going to come back to the five-year forecast in a few minutes. But I do want to point out that the five-year forecast, you really can't understand the five-year forecast without going through and reading through the assumptions. And what I try to do with my assumptions is I try to make them have a lot of graphical information in there showing historical information for the district anywhere from 5 to 15 years going back and giving you an idea or some insight onto how I make those projections going forward. Most of my projections are heavily based on what's happened historically within the district to get an idea as we plan for going forward. So I strongly encourage you to take a look at the forecast and assumptions in there, but I'll kind of skip through that right now because we're going to go over the forecast in a few minutes. So as you get down to, I think it's page 17, you'll get to the next area that we have in here. And it's really, it's what I kind of came up with is, you know, I want it to be a one-page score sheet for the board and for the public to review. And you'll see it here, it's in green, it has our revenues and expenditures and a graph on the bottom. And if you have it in front of you right here, board members, it looks like this. And what this is I want to take in these quarterly reports, give you an idea of where we are at with collecting our revenues and where we are at with spending our money or realizing our expenditures throughout the year. So what you'll see is, and what's very consistent with the past, not just here, but throughout the state of Ohio, our revenues come in basically twice per year. And I'll try to increase this a little bit on the screen to make it a little easier to read. Our revenues come in two main times per year, once in July and August, and that's our first payment of the year. It'll be an advance in July, a settlement from the county in August. And then we see again that happening in January and February typically. And so twice per year is when we get our tax payments, and that corresponds to when our homeowners typically pay their taxes. So you'll see those come across, and that's where you'll see that, you know, although we're only one quarter through our fiscal year, we've already received nearly 40% of our anticipated revenue. And again, that's because for tax-wise, we've basically got half of our payments already, okay? And then we do have some other payments that we'll see throughout the year outside of the tax area, which we'll realize in quarter three. But I want to have it to be a scorecard. And then with our expenditures, we're right on pace to where we're currently about 24% along the way with our expenditures for the year. So again, as you can look at each of the areas, salary and benefits, we're right around the 25%, which is pretty much exactly where we would want to be. And then you'll see purchase services and supplies and materials, you know, a little bit lower on each of those areas. So just to give you an idea, and this will be updated each quarter in the report, and that's where the graph shows where we are right now, and we'll show it throughout the year. Obviously in the graph, you know, our revenues are in green. I like green as money, okay? You know, red is our expenditures, money going out, okay? In an ideal situation, we will keep our revenues over our expenditures, but we'll talk about that in our forecast a little bit. Moving further through that document, you're going to see a lot of the detail. We have it both by the appropriation level, showing what we appropriated for the year, what our expendable for the year is, what we've adjusted already for the fiscal year, and then for the actual expenditures and where we are, again, percentage-wise on each of the appropriation levels. After that, you're also going to see a detail of all of our line items as we get into each individual district line item from our 400 to 900 levels. 400 are purchase services, 500 supplies and materials, 600 is equipment, 800 is miscellaneous, and 900 is typically your advances and transfers. So you'll see a breakdown of each of these, again, exactly what we've spent, what we've appropriated, what we spent, and a percentage based on where we are for the year to give you a good idea of how we're spending the money so far. I do want to bring up or draw your attention to, we'll see what page it is here, it's near the back of it. This year I did add in an investment review. And the investment review is where we currently contract with Red Tree Investments to manage our investments for the district. You'll get an idea of the investments that we hold, around a little over $50 million of investments that we have with Red Tree. And you'll get an idea of what the yield is or what the return on our investments are currently. Where we're, our general fund is about 1.25%. Constructions are doing a little bit better at 1.37%, and our bond retirement is a little bit lower at just under 1.2%. Now, is that good or bad? Okay, and that's why we have an area there where we benchmarked other interest rates of areas that we can typically invest in. So let me first go back and talk about how we can invest. A school district, and for the right reasons here, we're very, very limited on what we can invest in. Okay, we're not going to go out and invest in penny stocks or certainly take the money to Vegas and put it all on black. So we're very limited by state law on what we can invest in. And we do break down a little bit our portfolio showing what we're investing in or what areas that we're investing in. And you'll see a lot of the areas that we're investing in are U.S. agency notes, treasury notes that we're buying from the federal government, CDs, bank CDs, and then commercial paper. And commercial paper is the one area that you may not see being that common in investments for school districts. It's a little bit outside of the norm, but it is allowable, and it's allowable only on very specific companies that are highly, highly rated for purposes of investment qualities. So we do invest in some commercial paper, and commercial paper is just like when we talk about a U.S. agency note or a treasury note. You know, you're taking out a loan, or the federal government's taking a loan from you, okay, and they're paying you interest on that. Well, commercial paper is the same idea, as we're taking an investment in a specific company for a specific amount of time. Okay, under the law, we're allowed to hold commercial paper. 40% of our investments can be held in commercial paper, a maximum of 40%, and we can only hold commercial paper up to 90 days maturity levels. So it's not a long-term investment. It is. It has a good deal of liquidity on it, so we're able to sell it back to the companies. And the companies that we've been investing in, the two that jump out off the top of my head, is Toyota Motor Company, and Toyota Motor Company, and then Coca-Cola are two main areas that we've been holding in some commercial paper for our investments. So we're doing fairly well, because a lot of school districts you'll see do invest in Star Ohio, and Star Ohio's at 1.22%. So we're getting a little bit better of a return, specifically on our construction funds. And that's what we're trying to do ultimately, is maximize our investments in order to create income for the district. The one other area I do want to touch upon just very, very, very briefly, but it is a hot topic in the market. We do hold some investment, CDs with the Bank of Puerto Rico. And the Bank of Puerto Rico is obviously the territory of Puerto Rico has been very, very hit very, very hard. And I don't want to sound callous at all as we talk about our investments with them, because this is at a very large human toll within Puerto Rico. But from our point of view, from the financial point of view, the investments that we do hold, they are CDs. They are fully FDIC insured. We do not hold more than $250,000, which is the FDIC insurance limit. So if in case something would happen to the Bank of Puerto Rico, we would be backed by the federal government, and we would be given 100% of our investments, plus any accrued interest within two business days under FDIC rules. So we're not rushing to sell it. You know, it may not be the best place to invest as we go forward, but we will hold it until maturity because we do have the safety net of the FDIC insurance. But I did want to make sure the board was aware of that, and in case you would hear anything about that, you have an understanding of that. Moving on through here, I did add in the last two pages of the report are a construction update. And I just thought it was important, as you see, we have roughly $33 million that will be going into the construction project. So I have two pages, both front and back. The first set of pages is what our encumbrances are so far. So this will show you that as of September 30th, we had $7.6 million, or approximately $7.6 million encumbered. Again, encumbered is meaning we've entered into a contract, we've issued a PO, we've tied up the money for a specific purpose, okay? So we have a remaining unencumbered fund balance of $26 million and some change. You'll also see that interest earnings to date is just under $80,000 that we have in there, and that I also put in there what our premium on the sale of bonds because as we sold our bonds, we generated premiums to offset the cost, and that's very common through that process. So, but it adds up our total allotted funds, and that's why I wanted to account for that, showing exactly what we've held. It then goes detail line by line of each of the POs and what they're for and who they're with to give you an idea of what we're tying up with each company right now and what it's for. And then the second two pages is actually talking about our expenditures to date, or at this point through September 30th. So we have, again, the same amount of money that we had taken in on the sales bonds, premium bonds, and the earnings interest. But this time, instead of our encumbered funds of $7+ million, we've actually expended $742,000. And again, the following page shows you exactly how we have spent that so far and with who, based on checks we've issued to each of the companies. So that's the quarterly report. And if it's okay, I'd like to switch over to the five-year forecast. The five-year forecast you can certainly bring up in front of you, board members. I encourage you to take the sheet out of the out of the quarterly report that has the five-year forecast. But you can also bring it up on your computer. I have a full breakdown in board docs for you to go through as I have it in the screen behind me. So twice a year, the board is, or the treasurer is required to present to the board an updated five-year forecast for the board's consideration, ultimate approval by the board, and submission to the state of Ohio. We are required to do that in October and May of each year. So this is our October update of the five-year forecast. This is a full-blown, brand-new five-year forecast. We do the full forecast in October, and then we do an update of that forecast in May. It's typically how the state likes to look at it. So what you're going to see in the five-year forecast here is we've moved everything from the May forecast that we had either anticipated for fiscal year 17 or we actually realized for fiscal year 17. Now that's in the books. That's actuals. And then we're going to have 5 years of projections, including the year that we're currently in. Again, you're going to see the five-year forecast behind me, very small, and I apologize for that, but I'm going to blow up some areas that I want to talk about specifically. I encourage you to go out on the website and look at the five-year forecast, specifically the history, the 3 years of actuals that are shown on there, because I'm not going to go into details on those tonight. I look to the future with our forecast of the next 5 years and how we're positioned going forward. So breaking down each of the areas, you know, we look at our revenue and our local taxes. Specifically, this is our general property tax, or what we collect from what our homeowners and business owners pay in their semi-annual taxes. So we're projecting around $41.2 million a year this year in 2018. We are in fiscal year 2018 in property taxes coming in. And I have very, very anemic growth of about 0.5% annually. Now, why is that? So there's two main reasons for that. Is one, we certainly have new construction. We've been very fortunate in Westlake to have new construction, but that kind of gets offset by the property devaluations or challenges in property valuations that we currently fight through the Board of Revision and Board of Taxation. So I don't necessarily want to count on that money coming in and increasing the values at all. Additionally, any increases in property values, okay, are generally offset by House Bill 920, which decreases the effective millage. So even though we might have a valuation change, and we will, we'll have a, I believe we're up for a triennial update in fiscal year 2020. And though certainly I expect an increase in property values within the city of Westlake, but we don't count on that, again, because as values go up, generally the effective millage will go down and we collect roughly the same amount of money. So on here, the couple things I do want to point out is we have a current collection rate of 96.48%. That's set in December of every year, so it's already been set for this year. It's the same number that I was using in the May forecast. And at 100% collection rate, we'd be at $46.3 million. Now again, I want to stress to you, the $46 million and what I have up here, the $41.2 million, don't match up because we have an estimated $4.4 million in reimbursements that we get from the state of Ohio. So the reimbursements are your homestead rollback and your owner-occupied reimbursements. 10% for residential property, and if you live in the home that you own, you get an additional 2.5%. Now, the one key is, this has been on the books for many, many years, and you'll, I just want to point out that it was revised a couple of years ago, and it is not subject to our bond issue that we passed. So our bond issue and our PI are not subject to the reimbursements, but the levies that we have on the books, other than that, are subject to the homestead rollback. Any new levies going forward in the future are not subject. They did change the law. Ultimately, I hold the collection rate constant throughout the forecast. Historically, we've had a very good collection rate here in Westlake. I don't anticipate that dropping at all. Moving on, we have some state grants and revenue. We have, everyone should realize when they talk about school districts, they talk about, you know, your funding formula, the state foundation funding formula. We are considered a guaranteed district. Now, I will get on my political high horse for a second, okay, and give you what layman's terms is if they could give us less, they would. Okay, let me just stress that. Guaranteed means that if they could give us less, they would, because what they set up is, I think it goes back, and I can certainly double check this, but I think it goes back to you receive whatever you received, I think in 2015, fiscal year 15 is what they sent the guaranteed period to, that for your formula funding, you'd get at least what you got in 2015, it wouldn't drop anymore. Now, they did, the key to that though is they did drop it a little bit this year because they viewed the district as a district that has losing enrollment. And so we did take a small decrease in that, or we're expecting a small decrease in our foundation formula. So when we look at it, our $3.18 million is roughly $2.5 million in foundation formula, and then an additional $700,000 approximately in some other formula grants that they build in there for special education and transportation is the vast majority of it. Starting in this fiscal year, in this line item, if you'd go back to a former forecast, you'll see about $1 million decrease. You know, we took a large hit from the loss of tangible personal property tax and the supplement that we were getting. Tangible personal property tax was a business inventory tax that was actually phased out in House Bill 66 back in, I think, 2006. But they had been paying a hold harmless or a portion of a hold harmless for the past number of years. Starting this year, we no longer are eligible for any of it from the state, so that takes a dramatic hit for us of a little over $1 million, $1 million plus that we're gonna lose out, and there's, unless the state changes their rules or we go out for another levy, we have no way of recouping that money. We also have other revenue that is in the district. And that's really breaks down of, we have some of that property tax allocation. This is the homestead rollback reimbursements, homestead exemption reimbursements. So that's that main line item of the $4.4 million held constant throughout. That can fluctuate every year because there's also, I talked about the homestead rollback, there's also the homestead exemption, which is the first $25,000 of property for a senior citizens in the community who qualify. You know, we don't know how that's gonna play out every year. So, you know, I've just held it constant, but if we don't get it in the reimbursement, we get it through normal taxes. So either way, it will have an offset. It just moves from line item to line item. The other area I want to show and talk about briefly is the all other operating revenue. This is kind of a catch-all where we deposit money from city income tax sharing agreements, TIF payments, tax incremental financing. This is the Crocker Park agreement. We also have payment in lieu of tax agreements. If you remember last December, we entered into a handful of agreements with some properties agreeing to different valuations. We also put in our kindergarten tuition and interest income. And then the one area that has been a significant change this year, and if you go back to previous years, starting in fiscal year 17, I did make an accounting change and I started putting in pay to participate fees collecting as revenue. Before they were being collected as a decrease of expenditures, and it's just a philosophical difference between my predecessor and I, and I show it as actual revenue coming in. So that has an increase, and that's why I'm showing $1.5 million carried forward through the forecast. Moving on, this is just a quick graphic to show where our sources of revenue are. And, you know, just briefly go over, we're roughly 85% local funding for this year, and the same is projected for next year. I do want to point out, this is up 2 to 3% from fiscal year 17, specifically because of the loss of $1 million in the tangible personal property tax. That was state money coming in, or reimbursements we were getting from the state, and now it's gone. So the pie, the portion of the pie becomes larger for the local side of it. As we talk about salary and benefits, our expenditures, so obviously salary and benefits are the majority of our expenditures as a district. And that's okay. That's not a bad thing. Okay, we don't make widgets. We don't make equipment or cars or anything like that. We educate students, and there's a cost to do that. There's a cost to bring students to our buildings. There's a cost to feed them during the day. There's a cost to clean up after them. There's a cost to educate them. It's all involved in salary and benefits. So this year we're holding the $30 million on our personnel services. You'll see the breakdown of the three different areas, administrative and exempt, certified and classified. These all are estimates for this year, of course, but they're pretty much based off of what they were last year. We have had some attrition, and that's why we're able to hold the salaries at last year's level because of some retirements, but also because of some positions that were not filled. We didn't have the need to fill them at this time. So the areas I do want to point out is I'm showing a salary growth for fiscal year 19 next year and 20 the year after at 4% overall. Now that would include both a step increase and any negotiated base increase as we have negotiations this year. So I am building in 4% each year for the next 2 years, and then I'm showing 3% each year thereafter. The other big piece on here that you'll see is the line item for employee retirement insurance benefits going up each year as well. Now there's two pieces of it. One, I tie a percentage directly to salaries of 19%. That covers our required payments for STRS and SERS for the employee the employer portion. That also covers Medicare that we are required to pay, the employer portion of that, workers' comp, a number of different areas. So I use 19% as a general guideline of what I budget for the benefits side of it. But the other piece of it is medical or health insurance, medical, dental, vision, prescription. We saw a 12% increase this year, a pretty sizable increase. And in conversations, we're part of a consortium, Suburban Health Consortium, and in conversations with the decision makers of each district who are part of SHC, we don't see that amount decreasing over the next foreseeable future. It's just the cost of healthcare. You hear it in the news every day. It's hitting everyone across the board. So I have budgeted or projected 12% annual increases on our policy. Our policy is roughly $6 million. So to give you an idea, it's a pretty sizable amount that we're projecting of an increase each year to cover that cost. We also have purchase services is another area. This is part of the 400 levels. And we have purchase services kind of leveling out with some increases over the next few years. To give you an idea of purchase services and why it has kind of been a little bit higher than in years past, a couple years ago the district made a decision, I fully support the decision, of using North Coast Shared Services Alliance and Rachel Wixie for our substitute teacher management. And so we now contract with them for substitute teachers. Substitute teachers is roughly $364,000 that we had paid last year. Now again, if we didn't pay it through purchase service, it would just be moved over to a salary and benefit, as historically the district had hired them directly and paid them through salary and benefit line items. We also have some out-of-district tuition that we pay for students of roughly $500,000. We've had district equipment, service and repair of about $500,000. Utilities are $1.3 million. We've had $500,000 approximately in vocational tuition for our vocational consortium that we're part of. We also, in purchase services, includes the three areas that I'm pointing out specifically on the board behind me here is community school deductions. Last year was $654,000. Open enrollment, these are students who choose to go to another school district, leave Westlake and choose to go to another school district that accepts open enrollment. And that was a little over $55,000 last year. And then we have scholarship deductions, and the two main scholarship programs are the Autism Scholarship and John Peterson Scholarship. Again, we'll get on my political high horse just for a brief moment. The state has dramatically expanded the John Peterson Scholarship over the past several years. John Peterson Scholarship, and Stephanie, please speak up if I'm incorrectly saying it, but it provides for any student who qualifies for special ed services is eligible for the John Peterson Scholarship now, and they're able to take the money, both their per pupil funding, which I think is a base of $6,600, plus their categorical funding through special ed, as that amount is different for wherever they qualify between category 1 and 6, and apply that to a private school's tuition. And my main concern is I'm not sure there's a guarantee that the private schools are even providing the services for the student. So they may be going and just offsetting the tuition costs and not even getting the appropriate services that are needed for them. It's a parent's decision to make that move, but it's pulling money directly out of our district, out of the public funds. And this year, the state of Ohio has estimated it at over $300,000 for our deductions that are being taken for total for autism and John Peterson Scholarship. So when you look at it, you'll see that, you know, really $1 million out of our state funding, when I talked about that 2.5 million in the base level foundation formula or guaranteed level, we lose $1 million right off the top. We never even see it. It's deducted from us. We have to charge it off on our books, but it's money that we never see from the state. Moving on to a couple last areas, just a few more pages. We have expenditures of supplies, equipment, and other. Obviously, we need supplies to run the district. I want to point out one thing is we have a significant increase, or I'm projecting a significant increase in supplies and materials this year in 2018. And I want to explain why. Later in this year, I'm going to be asking the board to change our appropriations. And my plan is to what I've called is flipping the purchasing. Often, you know, we're starting school now pretty early as compared to what it used to be years ago. And so when we're looking at school starting at the middle to the third week of August, it becomes very difficult for us to get our books closed by the end of June, have people come in and order, you know, the necessary supplies, and then get them in before the start of school. And we want to have our supplies available for the students and teachers. So what I've done in the past with my former district is I flipped the purchasing on it, and we go out and ask our administrators and teachers to purchase what they need for the upcoming semester in April and May. We purchase it, we're able to get it into the school, inventory it, and get it paid even before everyone leaves for the summer. And then when our staff comes back in the fall, it's already there for them. So it's a one-time hit. It's not a hit you take every year, because we're just moving part of next year's into this year and so on each year going forward. So it's not something that's going to dramatically affect you, but it does allow greater flexibility, specifically with our staff and within my office, so that we're not trying to force out POs just to get things in a timely manner. So it also, we found, and working with some of our staff here, we found that we can get better deals by buying in the second quarter of their calendar year, the company's calendar years, because everybody is buying in July. Well, if we can push that up to, you know, April, May, June, we can sometimes get better deals and better bulk pricing than we would if we wait. So it has quite a few benefits, so we'll be looking at that later in the year, but I am forecasting that. We can always change that if the board would feel differently. We have an expenditures by category graph. Again, we're 81% salary and benefits. We are a people business. And then next year, we're projecting that to increase to 82% salary and benefits. Again, specifically because of the cost increase, mostly tied to our health insurance, but we also have that 4% increase built in there as well. And then the last page is the fund balance, and you know, the black line across the screen there is ideally where we want to be, okay, 3 months of cash reserves at the end of the year. okay? I will tell you, you know, as a treasurer, you know, I get very uncomfortable when we have, you know, like 2 months, okay? Because like I talked about earlier, when taxes are paid, they're paid in July and August is when we get them. Well, we still have expenditures in July and August, and you know, we want to get our salaries paid throughout the summer, and if we don't have the money yet, it becomes a very, very large challenge. So what we're going to need to talk about in the next over the next few months with the board is really planning for new money in the future, when the appropriate time for that is, the appropriate amounts that we'd be asking for. So I think those are going to be some conversations we'll have over the next few months. But you know, we are starting to spend more than we're taking in. Again, a big portion of that is tied to the state of Ohio and the loss of the funding that we've had over the past few years. But we're going to need to figure out a way to make it up one way or the other.